This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown. 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 Rewind to SmackDown.
And hello, we have now welcomed in everybody for Rewind to SmackDown. And before we get to SmackDown, we have the results of our poll, Wei.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Yes, right, we had our cutoff, and we have a patron's pick coming up next Thursday for Rewind Away, and we had thrown out four options for what we should review. We had given you the options of Paul Heyman on Stephanie McMahon's What's Your Story podcast, the April 23rd, 2007 edition of Raw, headlined by John Cena and Shawn Michaels, going 55 minutes, Santa with Muscles, the 1996 Hulk Hogan atrocity, and your winner with 36% of the votes was Survivor Series 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge.
Yes. All right. I kind of expected it. You know, it's a sort of like a big legacy show. I think we're all still in Survivor Series hype. And of the four options here, I imagine this to be the one that most people will have seen at some point in their lives. Surprisingly, have we reviewed this one?
Ever? I'm the worst person to answer these questions, but it was just streamed on the WWE Vault channel. So it's right up there. They just streamed it over the past week. So the whole event is there. Even if you don't have Netflix or Peacock, you can easily access the show.
Okay. So a bit of a early 90s WWE, WWF we'll be discussing next Thursday on Rewind Away exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe patrons. Thank you everybody for voting. A lot of votes, a lot of interest in this.
And Wei was a busy man this week. He was joined by Kate from Montreal for Collision Course on Thursday night, going through the second taping from, where were they?
Nashville.
Oh, yeah. That is correct. So that whole show is up there. And Wei and I have gone through all of the news for all the XL, for the XL version of Rewind to SmackDown, discussing highlights of Collision and the Continental Classic, continuing the ramifications of Rush's injury on this final battle lineup. The World Tag League featuring Yuto Ice and Hiroshi Tanahashi in a ring one more time. Ric Flair sharing what he has heard about Hulk Hogan's death. Our intrepid reporter, Ric Flair.
Dr. Flair.
Dr. Flair himself. And all of the UFC announcements over the last 24 hours as they move to Paramount, including a new earlier start time for its pay-per-views beginning in January. So all of that can be heard on the XL version of Rewind to SmackDown. And we will be back on Saturday night right after Survivor Series here on the channel.
Hey, a quick shout out to our Double Double and Espresso patrons, because you guys had access to the latest edition of Book Club with John Pollock and Neil Flanagan talking about this book is all elite. A review I enjoyed very much, John, because you know, you've reviewed a lot of books. A lot of the books that you've reviewed, I think, are pretty good ones. Not to say this one is not great, but there are certainly flaws in this one's construction. And it ended up being, I think, a very interesting conversation just about AEW in general from you too.
Yeah, this book, it was written by Keith Elliott Greenberg, who I think is like a really great wrestling historian. And I think this would be a much different book if he was writing this for ECW Press. But this was an AEW authorized book, and part of you can go into that understanding that, well, there's going to be some restraints on that. However, I think you as the reader, like, those are valid complaints to have when it comes to telling what is promoted as the definitive story of AEW. And there's insight, there's some things you will learn in reading this book. Like, certainly he had access to different people, but you know, if you are to ask someone, you know, tell me like the seminal moments in AEW's history, how well are those really dug into? Like, this is more so just like it's a celebration of AEW and not so much on like a lot of the big stories that have absolutely impacted the trajectory of AEW, good and bad.
Primarily, you're speaking of course, the CM Punk situation.
Like the Cody Rhodes exit, CM Punk leaving as well. I mean, they're named, they're included in the book, but it is certainly not a not any kind of dive into, you know, their exits and exploring that with like hindsight. And that's really not what this book is going to be. Like, this is more so like a, it's almost like a coffee table book, really. When you, I just watched, I read the book on my Kindle, but Neil got like the physical copy of it, and it's, you know, the photos are alone, like something that, you know, for a super fan, like this is something you may want to have. But if you're looking for like the deep in-depth story on AEW, you're going to be left wanting more, I feel, by the end of this. Okay. So we are now going to shift gears to SmackDown from this was taped a week ago at the Ball Arena in Denver, Colorado, and LA Knight arrives being informed that no, you are not getting a bye because of Sheamus's injury, but instead another mystery opponent after he had to face Nick Nemeth in the first round. And he's upset. He says, I respect Cena, but this tournament is really starting to piss me off. And off walks LA Knight into to prepare for his match.
I thought, I mean, as always, a good spirited promo from Knight, though I did feel it. It kind of goes against, to me, babyface spirit to complain about not getting a bye in a tournament rather than like happily taking on the challenge. But it's a little thing. You know, you wanted something to piss him off so that he can cut the spirited promo, I suppose.
The first tournament match is Jey Uso against Rusev in the quarterfinals, and they explain that both semifinals will take place on Raw, and the finals of the tournament are next Friday on SmackDown to set you up for, they'll have a week to promote the final match for John Cena. Rusev catches Jey, turns it into a side slam, dreaded bear hug is applied, and then Jey avoids the accolade, hits a suicide dive, lands the spear, but Rusev kicks out, and then Jey comes off the top into a machka kick, and again, Rusev goes for the accolade, and Jey fights to the rope, so Rusev yells, "This is for you, John," and he goes for an AA, and Jey pops off the shoulders, spears him, Uso splash, and he wins the match. I thought this was, like, nothing.
Very unspectacular match, like, which unfortunately just kind of underscores how much that's the norm of expectation for a Jey Uso match. Like, obviously he's had, you know, like standout performances, but more like the default to me seems to be this type of match. And these crowds don't mind at all because they love this entrance. And I mean, judging by at least some of the reaction, I thought that this match was probably good enough for them. I mean, I wonder at what point in the taping this took place. I'm sure the spoilers.
I think
there,
this was all in order. I think this was. Okay. I think this was all done in order.
So this show, I felt like the crowd's energy certainly dip after like that set of tapings. But for this particular match, I thought they were still up, and I think the star power of a Jey Uso happened. You know, helped them carry that forward. I didn't think Rusev looked particularly amazing in this one either. And for guys like him who actually have some history with Cena, like he did mention it in like one little promo, but I'm a little bit more disappointed that they didn't make a bigger deal out of like
the tank like,
or just like show us maybe, or like, you know, like everybody would have a story for why they want to be in this tournament. And Rusev like kind of barely told us his, and I feel like there was a lot more opportunity for him to, well, explain really wanting revenge against John Cena and what it did to him to lose that one. If anything, just as a way to give us this sort of like great highlight package, while we're continuing to celebrate John Cena's career, you know, like showing like the Miz's, you know, history with him, Rusev's history with him, just as almost like a clip show to, you know, like for us to finally like give one last thought to some of these memories before saying goodbye to that career.
Yeah, I just like, this is a match you can't argue like it didn't have stakes attached to it. It was like it just did not have a whole lot of life attached to it. And I think honestly, there's a lot of WWE matches that tend to fall into this pattern, especially like TV ones, where I think a lot of the audience, it's like they're not going to get engaged until you get into the near falls at the end. Like that's almost what you've been trained to do, because just the wrestling portion between these two doesn't inspire a whole lot of response, at least not to this Denver crowd.
Well, I'll certainly say like, coming off of two straight days of watching AEW television, where like the standard or at least the speed of the matches and I think the sort of like how the spectacle, I think, of like the moves that you tend to see on in those matches compared to like this particular edition of SmackDown, where everything felt very, I gotta say, like almost like a house show level, you know, type of like wrestling. It really stood out to me, like the difference between the two products.
The Miz is pleading his case to Nick Aldis. He wants back in the tournament to replace Sheamus, but Aldis says he has to choose at random from the tumbler. And R-Truth comes in, and he asks Aldis if he has something against his balls. Aldis says, no, Truth, I have great respect for your balls, but I have my own balls. So while Aldis is talking to R-Truth, the ball has been opened, and Miz switches the name inside, and Aldis is none the wiser. Truth takes off, and then Aldis looks at the name. I can't believe it. And it's The Miz. This is the dumbest they've ever made Nick Aldis look. Like, I feel they always try to, even Pierce, they make more of the ignorant one than the two. God, did he look like such a fool here. And then they cut to Kathy Kelly, who's like, some underhanded tactics there by The Miz. It's like, everyone have seen this. Aldis is just, oh, I can't do anything about this. He tricked me fair and square. I don't care that much, but it was that's how we got The Miz into this match. So what a great surprise.
The man was having to, I think, you know, think of a witty sort of back and forth with R-Truth joking about their balls. So maybe we could forgive him for, you know, taking his eye off the ball in this scenario. I do fully expect, though, like Aldis will punish The Miz somehow next week after he, of course, watches this taped edition of the show.
You're working a program with the Wyatts for the next 6 months. You're back to Dexter Loomis duty. Kathy Kelly is with Damian Priest. She says, I'm glad your eye is healing. Like, yeah, it healed pretty goddamn fast after you took a fireball to the face. Looks okay to me.
It's been like a month, you know, but yeah, well. Yeah,
he also, he had the 1 week of makeup, and I think it was by week two, it was, you know, these things happen, you know, you get burnt in the face. So Zelina comes in, and Priest asks if Black had sent her. She says, no, I entered on my own, and you're often the one on the receiving end of all of this punishment, Damien, and says that Black has his mind on bigger things. Like, bigger things. What in the world does Aleister Black have going on beyond this program that has just is just going in a circle?
He's got something going on with Cody.
Because that's been on hold for the last, like, 3 weeks with Cody. Cody is involved in bigger things, literally, at War Games, while Black will be watching this on ESPN.
Black, so, well, he's ambitious, you see, okay? He wants something with Cody.
Yeah, right? Well, I hope Black has YouTube TV. Well, if he has YouTube TV, he probably won't have access to this show on Saturday. So maybe he'll, I don't know, get Comcast or something. So Zelina brings up when Priest had his face burnt off. I'm looking at him, I'm like, well, he's made quite the miraculous recovery after his face was burnt off. And then Zelina leaves, and who should walk in but Rhea? And Priest is so happy. And Rhea says,
Priest is like looking at her like, save my career, take me with you. Because since he's left Raw and left this like thing with Rhea Ripley, he has been floundering so badly on SmackDown.
Yeah. She's selling more facial injuries than Damian Priest is.
Yeah. Priest is asking to join the War Games team, I bet.
Can I be in your corner or something? I'll carry the towel or anything. Rhea says, I've got an idea for you. Find me later. And never did. So I guess we're getting a mixed tag. If Nick Aldis would allow Rhea to cross boundaries and come onto SmackDown again. If.
So what are they building up to here? I mean,
tag. Aleister Black and Zelina. Damian doesn't have any.
Why would Rhea suggest that? Why would Rhea have to come in to suggest that?
because she knows her friend is floundering here on SmackDown and needs something. So she's going to lend her star power to Damian's falling star power. That's what's going to happen, Way.
The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high-quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelly Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelly creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forests. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bitson's band is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. Chelsea Green and Alba Fire come out for her championship celebration. We've got flags of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, and she is proud to enter her second term as your first and fourth two-time most dangerous United States women's champion. She is not just the greatest champion in the history of the country, but in the continent of the North Americas. And she calls upon her expensive pyro display to go off. But when she counts down to one, Jade Cargill comes out, murders Alba Fire, hits Jaded onto Chelsea. And my favorite part of this was as Jade leaves to the back, Green is selling in the middle of the ring, and then her pyro goes off, and she has just loses her mind as the pyro goes off at the end. I thought that part was funny.
I did not.
The pyro at the end?
It just left such a sour taste in my mouth that I didn't really think like this punchline made up for it. I mean, I understand when you're talking about a Chelsea Green title run, you're not expecting anything all that serious. But I wouldn't expect week three, right? Technically, because she won and then didn't get her celebrations, fine. But like, it feels like we just started and her first segment is to basically get beaten up by the world champion. So I never expected anything like serious out of this US title run, but I thought there was at least some potential that they could make this into a more serious Chelsea Green rather than what appears to be even a bigger punching bag for the rest of the division, including, of course, the world champion. I did not think this was a great start to the run.
I don't think you really want a much more serious Chelsea Green. Now, I could argue you probably do want a serious U.S. title.
Champion. Mm-hmm.
And I think they've made that decision is that this title is more valuable on the...
It's more valuable as a comedy prop than
exactly than it was on Julia, who just did not take at all. And I don't think
that's an either or. I don't think those are the two options, you know?
It shouldn't be, but I think that's clearly what we are seeing as a result of this.
Yeah.
What did you think about Julia's segment tonight?
I haven't been on WWE.com or social media lately. I'm sure she did something backstage.
Bliss is
so what is this? Like Jade versus Chelsea is the match.
I don't even, right? The funniest part is after this, I don't even think this is building to anything. I think it was just Jade just is running through everybody. And I don't think they're going to do it because this is going to like, the part about this, if they did this match, the audience would just turn Chelsea Green total babyface in this scenario, I think. And maybe that's what they want ultimately.
Not necessarily. Not if it's just like a, well, it would probably just be a squash. Wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. I didn't even get the sense they're even going to do a match from this. If anything, they're building up like Meechan to be her next 30-second victim.
True. Yeah.
Bliss is warming up with Charlotte Flair, and in come Ripley and Io, and they mentioned the fact that the last time Charlotte faced Asuka, she tore her ACL, and she was out for a year, and AJ Lee comes in. They know they're going to win tomorrow. I'll make sure of it. And then she walks off. So it's like AJ playing her half crazy character, and the other four seem to enjoy having AJ Lee on their team. What a bonding exercise this was.
We are more and more seeing, I think what the current iteration of this AJ Lee character is. And honestly, for my taste, I think it's a little too much character. Like it almost feels like too much of a caricature, when I think what's drawing people to her is
therapy. You're like nuts.
I kind of just want to see her being more of a real person, but she's still playing like what feels like the type of character that is sort of one note that you would expect from a previous era. You know, you have one character trait now, just like go, you're crazy, go.
The never-ending Tom Rinaldi interview with John Cena. We're now down. How low on Tom Rinaldi's notes was his velocity run? Tell us about velocity, John.
Maybe they started from the very beginning and they just had like every month, categorized.
Okay, yeah. I've got about a question and about 18 follow-ups on your run with B squared. So backstage, Kathy Kelly asks, Jade, why did you...
Sorry. When is this interview coming out, by the way?
They said next week.
Okay.
I hope it's like a 45-minute interview, and we've literally seen the whole thing over the last like month and a half. Yeah. I don't know what left there is to talk about. There has never been teasers of an interview that I have no desire to watch in full, because I've just seen too much of it already. I've got it. I've got the John Cena interview down here.
I kind of hope they never release it and just maybe give it to us in clips for like the next year.
Another year, right up until like he goes into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
In 2040. Let's just keep this interview running. Tom Rinaldi can do pickups. Backstage, Kathy Kelly is freaking out over Jade attacking Green and Elba Fire. She says that's a statement to anyone that runs their mouth. She bumps into B-Fab and asks, "You have something to say?" And B-Fab does not. So Meechan walks up to B-Fab and says, "Why doesn't anyone check her? Maybe it's going to have to be me." And based on this reaction, they've either turned B-Fab into the she's been bullied and now she's frightened of Jade, or this woman is turning on Meechan.
You get that sense, really?
I got the sense that she is going to be...
She's joining Jade, you think?
I don't know. She didn't stand up to her, do anything here. She looked like
she's already beaten her, like very easily.
Well, then this is either the worst babyface or our next heel. Those are the two options.
She is pretty lowly ranked, but I think that would be interesting potentially. Like, I mean, at this point, we got Jade Cargill pretty much like as a solo act and being very dominant and successful. But I wonder if there's an opportunity to attach other names to her, and I wonder if B-Fab would make any sort of difference. Certainly, like. A B-Fab is, I mean, she's kind of stuck at a level. You could say that about pretty much the entire SmackDown women's roster right now. So
Meechan will be like, wait, you can turn on me, but just bring me with you.
Yeah. Can I turn too?
The Miz and LA Knight, our next quarterfinal match. So Miz runs Knight into the barricade, and then Knight leaps to the top for a superplex. We see an STF avoided several times by Knight, and then it's a... Miz applies an STF and Knight fights to the rope. He gets gouged in the eyes and Miz tries to use the rope for leverage, and Charles Robinson catches him, goes for another skull crushing finale, and Knight turns it into the BFT. Knight wins. So he wasn't prepared, but it was only the Miz. So he still overcame him.
Yes.
Maybe that's why Aldis didn't care. It's like, it's not like this guy's going to win anyway. So who cares? No harm, no foul.
So by modern standards, like, I always thought of LA Knight as like a pretty sort of like typical WWE style of wrestler. You know, he's like tall, he's muscular, good promo, but really not that spectacular or that fast in ring. But this match against The Miz made Knight look like Will Ospreay, man. Like, like Miz is arguably the most maybe WWE style wrestler on the roster. And I thought Knight just like was so much better than him. And so much more fun to watch. And that's not really saying much, but it's saying more so just the gulf of difference between like two people I considered to be like your very standard WWE guys. Man, this late into this taping for this crowd, I just, there was very little crowd reactions for this one, and they did not give them much to sell. Like, you set up a mystery opponent tease, right, for LA Knight. And by the mystery opponents that we've had revealed so far, your mind is running wild. So yeah,
I think this pre-tape air, the backstage thing aired for the crowd as well, I think.
You're still disappointed.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Disappointment,
yeah,
like doesn't just leave you in like 20 minutes, you know? Like,
What if Nick Aldis, what if this had gone according to plan and he pulls a ball out of the tumbler and it's like someone from TNA or something? Like, they had like 15 minutes he was going to draw this name until someone had to be ready. Like, how small of a pool was he drawing from here? For a surprise.
Well, maybe the entire TNA roster was in the back there.
All just on all yeah. prepared? Joe Hendry was there in catering. He was all ready.
But the crowd didn't react much. They didn't even really bother to sweeten the audio, I found, on this particular show either.
Wait, it's Thanksgiving. Give them a break, okay? Yeah, they right. just let's be authentic, okay? This is the real of unreal. Becky is, again, running down her teammates while trying to be supportive. She notes she's the only one with a 100% success rate in War Games, and then Asuka laughs about putting Flair out for a year the last time they faced. Asuka at least got she got her balls back in this segment after being totally just destroyed in that promo segment on Raw. So at least Asuka got some focus here.
A little bit. I mean, since Becky's been announced, she's essentially sort of defaulted as like the leader of the group. And of course, she's the biggest star, so you understand why she'd get most of the screen time. But unfortunately, like, it's taken away from Asuka, who, you know, like prior to being attached to this War Games thing, has felt like one of the main characters on Raw, certainly the hottest character in the division on Raw. So she's taken a bit of a backseat. But hopefully, I mean, War Games is only tomorrow, and hopefully starting Monday, she gains back that momentum.
So the advantage match with Charlotte Flair and Asuka took a while to get going. Asuka lifted her up for a knee strike and then goes for a triangle. Flair lifts her up into a sit-out powerbomb, and then they go to the floor, and Asuka's thrown across the desk, and she pops up and goes for the mist, which Charlotte ducks and takes out Fred Ottman's kid. And
Graves called him Chalkmaster Jr.
Oh, did he call him Shockmaster Jr.? I missed that. Takes him out. He's gone. And then into the ring they go. Charlotte tries for the figure four and is put into the Asuka lock, rolls on top, and then hits the natural selection, pinning Asuka in kind of just like that. And the women get the advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I guess, like, because we've been a little bit removed from just, like, the, you know, like, Asuka being such a main driver of stories on Raw, this didn't feel like that big of an upset to me. But like, when you kind of think about it, yeah, like, I don't know if Asuka should be just be taking those losses at the same time. You know, Charlotte is respected at a certain level, and it's not that crazy. Like, what is their actual record? Has Charlotte always beat her, or has Asuka beaten her a few times?
I don't know their career record off the top of my head. She did beat her at WrestleMania. Flair.
Yeah, anyway, so
I just think for the actual story, I think there's a great story of like Charlotte beats Kyrie, and it just gives Asuka the ammunition to be even more awful toward Kyrie for blowing it. But I guess they want to do this rematch, whatever.
They're pretty even, at least according to maybe a quick search. So It's not exactly like a blowaway. And in this case, Charlotte won. Yeah, totally fine. I didn't think the heat was very high for this one either, you know, and just
how much heat was there on this show, period? I mean, a little bit in this next match that we'll get to. But dude, it was these double tapings. There is a cost to them, even though there is a savings, Mr. Shapiro.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
So the traditional Survivor Series match.
We did get a segment with Ilya Dragunov in the back as well.
Oh, yeah. I skipped over that. So this was the first week. It was like the streak is over. It was like 13 weeks they had been trumpeting that they'd had the U.S. title challenge, but not this week.
For a double taping, I guess you can understand, right?
You're right. It does make sense. He says the open challenge will always be open. I'm glad. And he tells Tama Tonga that I am right here. But then Ciampa walks in and says, you should only be concerned with me. He shows off Axiom's mask that he took last week, and next, I'm taking your belt. Ilya says, I will think about that. Jackass.
They're
and
really
the whole arena started chanting, Jackass, Jackass. And did you see all the shirts they had sold? Call me Jackass.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was like John Cena shirts here. It's crazy.
It's the new yeet, I think.
Yeah, huge.
They're really working hard to try to like get this whole Jackass thing over for Ciampa. And
what if this is setting up Johnny Knoxville's return? Maybe this is the 4D chess we got to be thinking.
I think they'd have to pay royalties on those shirts if that's the case. I just like I don't know. Like I thought we weren't in the PG era anymore. You know, like could they not have come up with something?
They're saying ass.
Is Jackass not a PG? What level is this now? Is this an R-rated term, Jackass? Like, I'm sure there's something way more current, way more like Gen Z that they could have come up with just to make this feel a little bit more interesting.
Hey, shithead.
Yes.
Maybe they can get that one going. I have nothing to add about this. This is
Ciampa versus Dragunov, and then we got Tama versus Dragunov as well at some point.
Elimination match with the MFTs against Sami Zayn, Shinsuke Nakamura, Motor City Machine Guns, and Rey Fénix. So they attack Zayn in their corner, and they start isolating him, and the MFTs get sent to the floor, and we get a procession of dives by the babyfaces, and it is Shelley using a crucifix on JC Mateo into a bridging jackknife by Sabin, who's the legal man, and that is our first elimination. I did enjoy the commentary early on where Michael Cole was just blown away. He's like, who would have ever thought Tama Tonga would be here in the United States? Who would have ever thought JC Mateo would be here? And then Graves is like, actually, JC Mateo was an Olympian. He's a great athlete. I could have easily seen him coming here, but it took Solo Sikoa to bring him here.
Actually, you're one actually. Of those guys.
Nakamura then sets up for the Kinshasa, but gets distracted by Solo on the apron. So Tama hits the Veleno into the cutthroat, pinning Nakamura. This is what I always love about these eliminations. It's just boom, 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 boom is our procession of eliminations. Fénix survived the big spine buster, hits Tongaloa with a Rana, hooks the legs, Tonga's out. Fénix then ducks the Samoan spike. Fénix actually did get a bit of a reaction here before his elimination. But first we had the Motor City Machine Guns double teaming Sikoa. They go for the skull and bones, and it gets stopped when Tama shoves Shelly off the top. Tala tags in, choke slams Shelly on the edge, rolls him in. There goes Shelly. Then catches Sabin on a high cross, discus lariat. Sabin is gone. And then Fénix gets at least some offense here with a high cross to Sikoa and Tala, and then gets caught by the cutthroat again when he returns to the ring, and out goes Fénix. So it is 3-on-1 against Sami Zayn. He fights back. He manages a haluva kick to eliminate Tama. Then on the floor, Tala Tonga runs into the timekeeper's area. And I swear to God, this was the fastest count in the history of pro wrestling. Tala Tonga, in like 2 seconds, he was counted out. He's gone. And now it is down to Solo Sikoa and Sami Zayn. Zayn survives a pair of spinning solos, then a splash off the top. He continues to kick out and then stops the Samoan spike, or sorry, the Samoan drop off the turnbuckle. Sunset bomb hits an exploder and sets up for the haluva kick, but it is cut off with a super kick, and it ends with a Samoan spike, and Sikoa gets the win, surviving for his team.
Mm-hmm. I thought overall it was a decent attempt to book like a throwback Survivor Series match in a very sort of like traditional way. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, you start off with the faces doing well. Then you give one person the sole credit for giving his team the 3-on-1. In this case, it was Talatonga, who they, they're almost like quite laughable at, like, how much, like, his only gimmick is that he's tall. And yes, I understand, like, his name is Tala, but it's like they have guys multiple times on the babyface side be distracted simply by looking at him because he's so tall. Like, you know, Saban looks over and, like, he's so tall, he takes his mind off the match because he can't believe how tall this guy is. And that leads to, you know, the heels taking advantage.
Do you now understand the genius of the segment with the little person on Raw?
Right, yes.
Look how tall Dominic is.
Yeah, I just, again, I understand this is a throwback match, but, like, that really feels like almost like 280s to me for this dude's entire gimmick. I thought Phoenix had, like, the best run of the entire match in that little brief, like, moment that he, like, you know, came back. But
we're talking, like, 50 seconds.
50 seconds, and then he was just, boom, eliminated. Yeah. So there was just not enough spectacle in this match to make it worthy of, I think, a modern professional wrestling consumption. And again, I understand this is traditional Survivor Series, but that doesn't mean you have to let the style of wrestling be, like, from the 80s as well. Not to say it was entirely that, but it wasn't a high enough level, in my opinion, to be compelling.
Well, yeah, you had to do 9 eliminations in this period, and it's just, like, they tried to space them, but, like, it's impossible when you're doing 9 falls like that, even in they did, like, a 25-minute block here, and they did do a commercial-free, by the way, on the USA Network. So I've just, like, the traditional Survivor Series matches, like, I'm not the biggest fan of them. And I think that the audience too, it's like, there's a reason tomorrow there aren't any of these on the show. Like, I think the audience has generally outgrown them. I think if you're going to do one for nostalgia's sake, SmackDown is the place to put it. So I didn't have a big issue with them putting this here. Match was fine. I think by default, this was probably the best match on a show that really did not have the I wouldn't be recommending any of these matches from tonight if you missed the show.
I wouldn't either. I thought there was, like, a certain energy that was lacking. I think a real effort in the creation of this entire show that I felt was very lacking as well. I do like the Survivor Series match as a TV thing, right? Like, I was interested in this. I was looking forward to this, in fact. But I thought the booking of it was just, like, again, quite typical and maybe not as, like, inventive or fun as I hoped it to be.
Is, like, this a better match as a 10-man tag? Without all the,
but then you can't bill it as a Survivor Series.
Well, that's
not special then.
Well, was this special?
It was more special than a 10-man tag. I would argue. Like, okay. I like this throwback graphic. I thought that was really cool. I like the graphics in the match when you see the little scoreboard.
What about the team names they thought of?
Could have been a bit more creative with that. Okay. They could be way more creative with this. They could have way more fun with it. You know, each person, like, cutting this sort of, like, theme. I don't know.
What if Tala had debuted coming out of an egg?
That'd be amazing. You know, you could have had Dominic or you could, with a team of little people, just kind of calling back to one of the great Survivor Series matches in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Queasy and wheezy and cheesy. Yeah.
Right.
Lots of great ideas in Survivor Series history, including in 1991.
That's right. You like this Survivor Series match? How about an entire show?
Yeah, imagine a whole card of these matches. I mean, what were they thinking? So Solo Sikoa celebrates. The lights go down. Michael Cole, are we still on the air? And the Wyatt Six appear, well, at least 4 of them on the apron, and Uncle Howdy appears from behind, laying out Sikoa with Sister Abigail, and that's how we end.
Yeah. Are you ready for the show to be 3 hours yet?
Oh, man. We're going to talk about that. No, I'm not. Could you imagine this show for 3 hours?
Yeah. Again, like, maybe we give them a pass because, like, this was a double taping. They put all their effort into last week's show, perhaps, and then just, like, in 10 minutes, like, here's something for, like, you know, 90 minutes. But SmackDown continues to certainly feel like the weaker show. And, yeah, this is not a show I would say most people needed to watch.
Agreed. Yes. This really, the go-home show was on Monday. This was 2 extra hours that you learned that the baby faces on the women's side get the advantage, and we got 2 forgettable tournament matches in the Cena tournament involving people that are not winning this tournament.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So on Monday,
Monday we've got Gunther and Solo Sikoa, which is an interesting match how they handle that one, and then LA Knight against Jey Uso. Mm. So I'm thinking we're getting, do you see us getting Gunther, Jey Uso in the final WrestleMania rematch?
Yeah, well, that makes sense just historically. But I think Knight versus Gunther makes a lot of sense, too. I think the audience is... Do the audience want to see LA Knight versus be John Cena's final opponent? Maybe not, but I would certainly say they want to see that more than Jey Uso. So I could see Knight beating Uso as like Knight's big win. And Jey, of course, like still attached to like everything with the Vision. Like maybe that's enough for an excuse for why he loses. I think Knight versus Gunther will have the audience on Knight's side in a big way.
So Solo Sikoa isn't winning this.
Barring any sort of like
I'm more so interested in how they booked this, and my god, if they have the Wyatt Six somehow involved with a Gunther match, that will be we'll see what they do.
Be interesting.
Maybe he'll get counted out like Tala tonight. Maybe we'll have the speed count in effect. All right, for those on the YouTube channel, make sure you return Saturday night. We will be live after the Survivor Series, roughly 10:30 Eastern, and we are going to continue on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We're going to do a quick preview of the Survivor Series for the cafe and then go through your feedback and questions.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.